All right, our next speaker is also from Stanford, and Ronak Soni. He'll tell us about Tiki Bar as a movie with and without 3D glasses.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for having me. So as Rafael Leslie said, I am talking about Tiki Bar as a movie. What does this mean? So you heard a bunch of things about Tiki Bar deformations today. And what I want to tell you is a set of ideas pioneered by Dubowski and Gorbenko and friends that Tiki Bar can be thought of as, the Tiki Bar deformation can be thought of as a in a particular way. Whenever we define a theory, we put it on a particular manifold with a metric. Okay? So the statement is that the deformed theory on a specific manifold is actually just the undeformed theory on a different dynamical manifold. Okay? I'm going to call the non-dynamical manifold that the deformed theory lives on the target space, and the dynamical manifold the base space. It used to be the worldsheet, but Eva forbade me from using that word. Okay. So the deformed theory lives on the target space, and the deformed theory on the target space is just a seed theory on the dynamical base space with a dynamical coordinate transformation between them. And this coordinate transformation is not a diffeomorphism in the sense that the metric here and the metric here are not related through this coordinate transformation. This is two metrics and one coordinate transformation. This is, personally, I've never seen this setup before. My first paper on this had the strange word half diffeomorphism because I didn't understand it, but it's just a coordinate transformation. That is the 2D version. When you put on this, so Sergei Dubowski called this a movie of a theory because you're really just looking at the original theory through the wrong manifold. Okay? When you put on the 3D glasses for this movie, what you find is that this picture is exactly equivalent to a 3D picture. And the 3D picture is that there is a path integral of pure general relativity, 3D general relativity with negative cosmological constant, with two boundaries. One boundary has a fixed metric, which is a metric of the target space. And the other boundary has a particular state. Here by state, I mean a functional of the metric. And this functional of the metric is a convolution of the undeformed partition function. Okay? This is the main takeaway. If you didn't understand all the words I used, it's fine. I'm going to come back to it. This will reduce to the usual 3D picture worked out by MMV and others, as I will explain. Okay, this is a motivation slide, but you've all heard the motivation, so I'll skip. To review again, what is Tiki Bar? In 2D flat space, if you have a theory with two conserved currents, J1 mu and J2 mu, you can make the following antisymmetric combination. Okay? Now here, I put these two at different points. What this marvelous paper showed was that when you take the first point to the second one, there are no power law divergences because of the antisymmetry of the combination. Well, the power law divergences are inside total derivatives. And it turns out that this makes the limit where x goes to 0 easy to define in a theory independent manner. Okay? We use flat space in multiple ways, but the most obvious way is that you cannot contract things at two different points in curved spaces. Okay? So some examples are when you take both currents to be two components of the stress tensor. Back in kindergarten, we all learned this way of thinking of the stress tensor where each row of the matrix was a current of its own. So here you can take both currents to be T, so you get T bar, which is not actually T bar, it's T into T bar minus trace T squared. Okay. There's J T bar, where you can take a U1 current and the stress tensor, and then the other combination as dictated by these epsilons. And there's TJ bar, which is the mirror friend of JT bar. And there are like an infinite number of these. You can just take any two currents. Okay? And the TT bar deformation is a class of theories defined by the following differential equation. Take the free energy on whatever manifold you're interested in. Its derivative with respect to some parameter lambda which I will call the deformation parameter, is the expectation value of this operator, okay, where you have to be careful about how you define the operator. And the point is, there's two lambdas in the right-hand side. This lambda means that you have to take the currents off the lambda theory, off the deform theory. The deformation back reacts on the currents. And this means that you have to take the expectation value in the deform theory, okay? And the fact that there are two lambdas here is very much the reason TT bar is so interesting. Okay, solvability, you've seen this before. You can find the flow of the S matrix and energy levels. The TT bar deformed S matrix of any theory is just the original S matrix into a universal factor, which Sarjay nicely spoke about. The energy levels on a circle of radius r can also be worked out in terms of the original energy levels. And there are similar formulas for other deformations like JT bar and TJ bar and whatever, and so on.
Yes? About Lorentzian variance at this stage?
It preserves Lorentzian. So TT bar preserves Lorentzian variance.
But that formula for energy doesn't look likely to be Lorentzian variant. A component of a four vector or anything.
Herman has an answer. I don't know the answer to this question. Okay. Oh, it's finite volume. So the manifold itself breaks Lorentzian variance. It's a cylinder.
Yeah, that's what I was. So is it the global breaking of Lorentz symmetry by the cylinder that's playing a crucial role in defining the deformation?
No. You can define it on an R2 as well.
No, but I mean, in the context of the result you're telling us, is it
matrix
important
is on
that,
R2.
That there's a global breaking of Lorentz symmetry?
Here, there's no global breaking. This is on R2.
But also partition functions, modular invariant. It's all the partition functions, modular invariant.
Okay, sorry, I do not know the answer to these questions, but yeah, thanks for answering. Yeah? Yeah, that's true. Thank you. That's a very nice way of putting it. Okay, before I move on, I want to make one point about signs. I have a deformation parameter, and as you heard earlier, there are two signs and they're different. I'm always going to stick with the holographic sign, and you'll see why hopefully by the end of this talk. Okay, so the TT bar deformation is also related to ADS3 say CFT2 with a cutoff. So let me be a little precise, because, okay. So write ADS3 in the Fefferman-Graham gauge and there's some radial coordinate rho, and make the following two identifications. The central charge, I should have been precise. We are TT bar deforming a CFT now because of the right side of this line. Define the central charge and G Newton to be related in the usual way. And the dimensionless combination of the deformation parameter and the size of the CFT manifold, they're related to 1 by rho c squared. Okay, rho c is of some particular value of rho. And the realization of these people was that the stress tensor sector of the deformed holographic CFT with deformation parameter lambda is dual to the pure GR sector of ADS3 with Dirichlet boundary conditions at this value of rho. Okay. Why is this true? So, this is nice. I should have cited Klaus-Leo-Marolf here. This is a very nice argument for this. Whenever you deform a CFT, so after you deform, there are only three length scales. There's a deformation parameter, the size of the manifold, and the cutoff. And dimensional analysis tells you that this equation must hold, because the free energy is dimensionless. This last term here, epsilon dou epsilon, is a funny way of writing the conformal anomaly. You know, the anomaly tells you how your theory reacts to the change in cutoff. So make the following assumption, that the anomaly piece is not touched by the deformation. It's just an assumption. I'm pulling it out of thin air, but I'm going to pull it out. Okay? Now, this piece is just the trace of the stress tensor. you know, trace of the stress tensor is how things react to global scalings. And this piece, by definition, is the TT bar operator because we define the theory using that equation. So that equation, with this assumption, becomes this equation. And here we use large C in the sense that this TT bar is just a product of two numbers. Okay. And now, if you convert all the lambdas and C's to gravitational variables and pretend that this stress tensor is the Brown-Yorke stress tensor, this is one of the Einstein equations. More precisely, is the Einstein equation with both indices which are radial. Okay? And this is the reason that this works. Okay? The any submanifold of ADS3 must satisfy this equation, and TT bar up to this assumption about the anomaly piece does satisfy that equation. Okay, the TT bar deformed theory. However, this is not the only Einstein equation in the world. In particular, we need this to be satisfied locally. But this dimensional analysis argument only gives you the global version. Ignore that for now. This will clarify itself as time goes on. Okay, before we move on, I need to tell you some annoying technical stuff about field binds, because not everyone knows what field binds are. So field binds are like the square root of a metric. Okay. There are times when you want to keep track not just of the metric, but of the local inertial frames at every point in the manifold. Okay, but the local inertial frame is different is a different coordinate system for every point. Okay, so what you do is you keep track of the coordinate transformation between the real coordinates and the local inertial frames, but the local inertial frames do not form coordinates, so you cannot define YA here. So you just define the matrix here. This is not an integrable matrix. And then, because in local inertial frames, the metric always looks simple, the metric just looks like the square of the EMUA. And these EMUAs are called field binds or frame fields. One more thing I need to tell you is about the spin connection. Just like the Christoffel symbol parallel transports manifold indices, the spin connection parallel transports tangent space indices. And it turns out that in two dimensions, the spin connection is effectively a vector. Okay, and unlike the Christoffel symbol, it's a vector. Christoffel symbol is not a tensor of any sort. This is a particular tensor. The important thing I want you to know about this is that the exterior derivative of the spin connection gives you the Ricci scalar. Okay? This will turn up later. Okay. So now let's go to the main point of the talk, the TT bar cinematic universe. And like every good cinematic universe, it's out of order. So to fix conventions, let me define the stress tensor as the derivative of the partition function with respect to the field bind. Okay? Now, how do you do a TT bar deformation? Well, you want to add TT bar, clearly. But the stress tensor is like a derivative with respect to the field bind. So you want to take delta lambda infinitesimal and you just add this object to Z naught, okay? Where this object is defined by expanding and keeping the first order. Yeah, and this guy gives you the TT bar operator. Now, this object is just some quadratic in something. You do Hubbard-Stratonovich transformation. You get something linear in the derivative. But something linear in the derivative can be absorbed back into Z naught just by changing the argument. Okay? One thing to be clear is that F is a field bind. F is a field bind of the manifold the deformed theory is defined on. Okay, this will be true for the rest of the talk. E is also a field bind. Delta E is a difference of field binds. And what happened here was that the linear term in the Hubbard-Stratonovich I absorbed to make Z naught F into Z naught F minus delta E. And then this guy here, this epsilons, basically makes sure that you get a Gaussian topological kernel in the change of, in the difference of field binds. This is how it works at infinitesimal level. How do you exponentiate it? The answer was found by a pair of papers, but the final answer is in this paper by Dubowski, Gorbenko, and Hernandez-Schifflé. And the answer they found was that the diffound theory is defined on a manifold which I'll call the target space and has field winds F. And it is exactly the undeformed theory on a dynamical base space with field winds E and the dynamical coordinate transformation between them. And you've seen this, and the partition function, the deformed partition function is the undeformed partition function convolved with this, with an integral over the dynamical field bind, the dynamical coordinate transformation. This is related to the coordinate transformation in a nice way. And this guy here is the difference of field binds. Okay? The only thing required to exponentiate it was to call F minus delta E E. Give it its own name. Okay? And this is an amazing amazing way of writing the TT-bar deformation, because A, unlike the definition, it's just one step. You don't have to solve a differential equation. It's a path integral. You can get various things out of it. You can get the S matrix.
Where is the y-dependent and the integrand?
Oh, it's right here. The dxa is f plus dya. The y is just a funny way of writing the coordinate transform. It's not important for my talk. I will eventually set it to zero. Okay, so how does the S matrix come out? Well, as I told you earlier, the S matrix, the deformed S matrix, is just the undeformed S matrix with a universal phase factor, right? And that universal phase factor just comes from the saddle point value of this coordinate transformation. That's it. That is how they found it. They went through JT gravity and so on, but whatever. I should say that even though on R2 this agrees with JT gravity, I don't agree with calling it JT gravity or on like the torus or something. But yeah. Okay, the partition function. The new energy eigenstates turn out to be the old energy eigenstates passed through this coordinate transformation. Classical actions. What is the classical action? What is the deformed classical action? You take that quantum equation that defined the deformed partition function, replace every object in it with its classical counterpart. So it's just a differential equation for the action, no? And how do you calculate that? People solved a lot of differential equations, but it turns out that you just plug in the saddle point value of this coordinate transformation, and that gives you the deformed classical action which solves the differential equation. So it's a pretty powerful kernel. Okay. Now you can go beyond TT-bar. I told you about these other deformations which are TT-bar plus JT, this JT-bar and so on, right? So let me tell you about this picture in a slightly different way. We are deforming with a current stress, which is a stress tensor. So what we do is we introduce a new dynamical gauge field dual to that current. The gauge field dual to a stress tensor is a metric, dynamical metric. Okay, and there is a sense of a frame, a coordinate frame, and the coordinate frame of these two manifolds need not agree. So we have to integrate over that coordinate, the relative frame also. And this is why there's a y here, which is so funnily defined. It's that it's not the coordinate transformation itself, but like how much the coordinate transformation differs from the identity transformation. It's the relative frame. So similarly, for I thought this picture would be bigger. I'm sorry. When you add JT bar, J is a U1 current. So you turn on the target space, you turn on a background gauge field, which I'm going to call B, and a background metric, which I'm going to call F. On the base space, you have a dynamical metric and a dynamical gauge field, E and A, and a relative frame for the metric, the X, and a relative U1 frame. What does this mean? Which means that when you take an operator, a charged operator from here to here, you better rotate it. by this frame, by this relative frame. So, in particular, in these two papers, we found that whenever the metric and the gauge field of the target space are flat, you can write a JT bar plus T, J tilde bar plus TT bar deformation in a similar way. Okay? There are two U1 currents, J and J tilde. And the TT bar, this was bad enough, but then we decided to be sadistic and add this as well. And because there are three terms here, we get a Gaussian topological kernel with three Gaussian topological terms. And three numbers, L1, L2, and lambda. That's it. That is all you need to do. And between these two papers, we got all three things to work. We agree with known results. Further, Eva just told us about the lambda 2 deformation, which takes TT bar and adds the other universally defined object, which is 1, okay, and uses that to define our deformed theory. Okay, and so turns out that we found the torus partition function, where r and tau are the size and the modular parameter of the target space torus. It is this kernel with the same integrals. There's something funny about this which is confusing us, which is this factor here. What is RBS? It is the size of the base space torus. So you get a relative, you get a ratio of the size of the target space and base space to Rai. And we have not been able to covariantize this yet, or like understand what you do when you don't have a torus. Yeah. But this thing reproduces the energy levels that Eva flashed. Okay. Oh, yes, exactly. Which is why this is so confusing right now. I would. Yeah, okay, that's okay, yeah. Yeah, like, there are many obvious, like, precise statements of non-covariance you can make here. None of them are true. It is covariant in the same sense this is. It's modular invariant, even though it looks strange and so on. It just looks confusing, which I think is something you would agree with. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So, now then, let's move beyond flat space. I'll take a water break. So where did flatness go into the DGHC kernel? Well, it went into the fact. So we had this field band F defined on coordinates capital X, and we had to move it to coordinates little x. So you have to define the pullback, which is called X star F. It's just F multiplied by the coordinate transformation matrix. And it turns out that because in flat space, F does not depend on coordinates because it's flat, it looks so simple. When F does depend on coordinates, this FA here will depend on capital X. And it can be arbitrarily nonlinear. And remember that X is a dynamical field. So if you just try to generalize this, you get some very nonlinear looking thing. Well, what we do is we cheat. We say, okay, there's a wall diff. I can use that to fix diffeomorphism invariance. I fix capital X to be equal to little x. It's my choice of gauge. And then you get this guy. Okay? This guy is just like it's a trivial rewriting of the previous kernel. Turns out that this does not assume flatness anywhere. And it satisfies a particular differential equation, which looks like the TT bar differential equation. Its derivative of log z is the expectation value of some TT bar operator. But this is a very funny differential equation, because usually when you define a product operator where two operators are at the same point, you have to be very careful with removing divergences and so on. Turns out that the operator that turns up on the right-hand side is just a coincident derivative with respect to the metric. Okay, F again, remember, is the fieldbind of the deformed theory. It's a metric the deformed theory sees. Okay? And you have to remove one contact term, which is theory independent. And this path integral satisfies this equation. Exactly. So in particular, if there are more contact terms in this double derivative, which are not cancelled off, they drive the flow. It looks strange. Maybe this path integral doesn't make sense in some way. Okay? And to be honest, we have not settled the issue. I am not claiming that this path integral definitely makes sense. Okay? But I will play some games with it anyway. The first game, which was actually played 12 years ago, right, already, is what I call part one of the cinematic universe, the first discovery of this kernel, which was in Friday, which was a paper by Laurent Friedel, who didn't care about TTBAR, did not know about TTBAR. What he proved was that this kernel satisfies this local equation. No integrals here. 5 minutes, so amazing. Okay. Satisfies this local equation. Where this TTBAR operator is the same strange guy that appeared on the last slide. Okay? And the right hand side of the equation is proportional to the conformal anomaly equation in the seed theory, in the Z naught. Okay? So when the seed is a CFT, the right hand side vanishes and so does the left hand side. Okay? Now you've seen this equation before in this talk. It is the equation I claimed was one of the Einstein equations. It came with an integral sign earlier. The integral sign has gone away. Earlier, it was a classical equation involving t into t bar. Now it's a quantum equation, which is the expectation value of some crazy operator. Turns out that this quantum equation has a name. It's called the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. The Wheeler-DeWitt equation is a constraint that has to be satisfied by any GR path integral with a boundary. Okay? And this satisfies that constraint. This tells you that there's something 3D about, and notice here this, I did not use large C or anything. All I used was a Z naught as a CFT. It could be one free boson. It could be the C equals half Ising model. And one clarification is that this whatever this 3D bulk is, it is not dual to the seed CFT. It's the deformation is building some 3D bulk. I call it the fake bulk, not because the bulk is fake, but because just to remind everyone that it's not ADS CFT. When the seed has a bulk dual, you can think of it as basically reduces to flowing into the dual bulk, as long as you ignore bulk matter and look at this paper for further statements. Yes. And it turns out that you can exactly show that that guy here is a path integral with boundary conditions, fixed metric boundary conditions on one side, and some particular convolution of Z naught boundary conditions on the other side. Okay, and this becomes the ADS flowing into ADS CFT picture at large C again. In particular, this weird convolution becomes a known fact about ADS CFT, where fixed metric is known to be equivalent to fixed metric at finite radius is equivalent to mixed boundary conditions at asymptotic infinity. And when you take a saddle point of this, you get that equation on the nose. Okay, now let me tell you about classical limits. When you take the C equals infinity, so now I'm going to stick to CFTs, and lambda C finite, remember that lambda was proportional to G Newton in ADS CFT, so lambda C has to be just finite in this limit. The kernel has a classical limit, so you can just solve equations of motion. And it turns out that when you take the target space, which is the space the deformed theory lives on, to be a sphere of radius r, the base space is a sphere of a bigger radius, where the bigger radius is parameterized by the deformation parameter. You plug it back in, you get the holographic answer for the S2 partition function. Good. I should say that this calculation was actually foreseen in MMV's paper. They mentioned that if you just take that kernel and take the classical limit, you should get this. Now I want to show one important thing, in my last minute, which is that there's a known fact that TT bar smooths out entropies, which Eva showed us, that the trace of the stress tensor on the conical manifold near the conical singularity did not diverge as much as it should have. Okay, you can see that very explicitly in this picture, where so you just graph the curvatures of the target space and the base space. The base space blows up. So this is theta. This is the interval. This is the curvature of the replicated manifold, and this has two delta functions which are smoothed out. And the base space, which is dynamical and has solved some equation of motion, has finite curvature at the endpoints. The CFT, which is the thing with local degrees of freedom, is seeing a smoothed out manifold, and that's why the stress tensor got smoothed out. The algebraic smoothing of the stress tensor, of the deformed stress tensor, is the geometric smoothing of the undeformed, of the base space the undeformed theory sees. And I'm on the conclusion slide. Okay. So conclusion is that TT bars and related deformations can naturally be thought of as a movie, and this taking this seriously allowed us to generalize the DGHC kernel, move beyond flat space, hopefully. Further, these 3D glasses gave us this equation, this Wheeler-DeWitt equation. I made a big deal of its 3D interpretation, but just look at it as a 2D equation. It's crazy. Why should an irrelevant deformation satisfy this equation? Further, relevant deformations satisfy a very similar equation. You put the relevant deforming operator here, you put the other sign here, and relevant deformation, theory defined by relevant deformation satisfy these equations. This guy satisfies the same sort of equation. So without the 3D glasses, you would not have seen this. You would know, no one would have guessed to look for this equation. Okay, future directions. The biggest thing for me right now is use the Wheeler-DeWitt equation to just calculate the finite seed deformed partition function on S2 maybe. There's one small issue, which is that TT bar deformations on flat space can also be rewritten as Polyakov. And what's going on there? Polyakov doesn't allow arbitrary target spaces, so do those problems somehow migrate into this kernel? I need to see that. I'm thinking about that currently. TT bar plus lambda 2 deformations, I'm not particularly happy with that. I'm not completely happy with what we have. I want to move beyond. The reason I got into it was this algebraic non-locality. Was this picture I showed in the very end. That there's something very cool about this, that there's an undeformed manifold where I can locate points, but there's still a gravity smearing things out, because there's another manifold which is dynamical. And another way of saying this is that I want the Lorentzian understanding of the theory in yesterday's sense. I showed you why the Reinier entropy got smoothed out in the Euclidean sense, but what is the microscopic understanding of this? And with that, I end the talk. Thanks.
Questions?
I'd like to understand the relation between two things. So you emphasize the fact that the Reinier entropy gave something finite.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I guess Sergei and Gorbenko and others had discussed that the TT bar theory is the same as the worksheet of a string,
yeah,
at least for some matter content.
Yeah.
Now, for a string, I would expect that the entanglement entropy should be infinite, or at least regulated by the string coupling. Which,
yeah, so I should say that it's not the Reinier entropy is not finite. I didn't like flash the real answer, but
well, let's say the von Neumann entropy.
It's not finite either.
Wait. You are talking about this other sign of deformation.
The holographic sign. It's not finite.
Sorry.
The result which says is, the paper which says it's finite is missing an integration constant. In particular, if you use this kernel, it's not finite.
Wait, what?
If you use that kernel, it's just that the divergence is much more universal than in usual QFTs, but it is not finite. It's just that the base space curvature is finite. This is different, and infinities sneak into the actual answer.
I'm very confused.
Yeah.
We get the Ryu Takinagi answer. It is finite only for the whole.
No, so you have to subtract off a counter term to get the Ryu Takinagi answer. You have to subtract off two counter terms to get it from here.
Yes. So can I just wanted to make this comment anyway, but Ronak already said it. So in these equations that just say that TT bar deform theory has finite entropy or finite sphere partition function, what is done is that, well, if you want by hand, the cutoff in a quantum field theory is replaced by the TT bar coupling, which is dimensionful. Which is, in particular, these theories, they do not really satisfy this equation that derivative of the partition function with respect to the coupling is just TT bar deformation. I mean, it's something else. There is also, when you deform the theory, you also change your cutoff by hand. And it's true that this is what Ryu Takinagi formula just tells you to do from the bulk, but I wouldn't call it independent field theory derivation of finite of this entropy, some extra input. And as I said, yeah, if you do some string theory, you have different extra input and probably it doesn't become finite.
Yeah, if I may put some equations to that statement. So if you take, say, the S2 partition function, what happens is that log Z S2 from holography is log Z S2 from the kernel minus a particular curvature contribution minus a particular cosmological constant contribution, and the number here is like log of the cutoff. Okay, so you have to throw away a cosmological constant, a divergent cosmological constant, to get the holographic answer. Which is true of the entanglement also, but in particular, this theory, if you take it completely seriously, does not have a finite entanglement of fundamental or plenary entropies.
So I also have a question about some finiteness. So you mentioned at some point, which I didn't understand, where you used that this when you analyze the S2 partition function, then you needed a CFT seed. So
oh,
where did
yeah.
You
so,
use that?
So here, this is all a completely classical thing.
No, in a previous slide, you also mentioned that.
Here?
Yeah, maybe I don't. Okay. So my question is based on my following a failed calculation. I tried to compute the coincidence point limit of two separated T and T bar on a sphere for, say, a massive scalar. Mm-hmm. You see a logarithmic divergence that you cannot get rid of. So I suspect that for generic massive theory on a sphere, you cannot really define this composite operator.
That might be true. In fact, like one might have some similar questions about generics, finite CCFTs also. And there is some confusion here. So let me tell you all the things I know, which is not conclusive at all. If you expand this in a 1/c expansion about, I told you about a classical limit at c equals infinity. Now I looked at the 1/c expansion on the sphere. The coupling constant that turns up is 1 over lambda, which has Mach dimension 2. So this, at least order by order, this is a renormalizable theory. Okay? So there's something funny going on here. Because we know that we suspect that there's some problem somewhere, right? But it is a renormalizable theory, so from the path integral, unless you can actually calculate it, it's hard to see a problem. What I suspect is happening is that this crazy TT bar operator does not limit to the QFT's TT bar operator properly. I think that doing an infinitesimal deformation is not some continuous thing where it like it's almost a QFT, and I suspect that's the reason that if it works, that will be the reason it works.
Okay, then it would be interesting to just compute this for a massive free scalar.
Of course, yeah. Oh, and I should tell you that for a massive free scalar, this guy just becomes the expectation value of phi squared. Okay, up to the m squared phi squared because of a very similar equation to this. And so it looks like it, this symbol, this magical equation is there even for a massive free scalar, which makes me think that there might be something, so which is what makes me suspect that this TT bar operator does not limit to the Q of T's TT bar operator. But yeah, I agree there's a question.
Ted?
I had an elementary question. The exponent of the Gaussian doesn't look like it's got a definite sign. So you're...
This?
Yeah. Am I just making a mistake? Or?
I said...
It's like the determinant of the difference between the two turbines, which could be positive or negative.
Yeah.
So why isn't that an issue?
It's definitely a possible issue, but I can tell you that in a 1 by C expansion, it's not an issue. In a 1 by C expansion, it's not an issue. Like if you go to that saddle point and do a 1 by C expansion, there's a section in the paper about that. And basically, what happens is that this thing here is significantly bigger than the target space radius, and that makes it in a 1 by C expansion have a definite sign. Okay, and the crazy thing is that for the holographic sign, this is a quantum gravity partition function. For the holographic sign, this doesn't even seem to have a conformal mode problem, which I don't understand. This should not be true, but something's happening.
Douglas, and then Eva.
When you suppose we take the case of the torus, when you integrate over the moduli of the base space, is there a divergence when the one of the directions of the torus becomes small?
I don't remember the details. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, at face value, the integral is not well defined on a torus. That's the usual problem with Euclidean path integral in quantum gravity. What saves the day is that the integral is one loop exact. So at least in kind of an algebraic sense, there is a well-defined prescription. One picks up saddle point, and there is no perturbative correction around that saddle point.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of saves the
day. Probably this means you're choosing some contour for the integration over the sizes of the two cycles of the torus.
Yeah, but we never understood what the good prescription for this contour is. Of course, after you already localized to the integral of a moduli, yeah, then there is a definite sign of choice of the contour. But one would like to have understanding of this choice of the contour before reducing to the integral of a moduli, and we don't have good physical understanding of that. But at least algebraically, we know what we're doing because the integral is one loop exact. But
yeah. And I should say that the statement I made about the conformal mode problem here only works for the sphere. It works because there's no moduli for it to interact with. Yeah.
Okay, so, sorry, can I just pursue quickly this point about the finiteness? So we agree the endpoints are smoothed out and the calculation of L, S prime of L, is finite.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you saying is infinite?
The actual Renyi entropy and von Neumann entropy.
I mean, S here was the von Neumann entropy.
The S prime is not, S prime is finite, I think. You can, what do you say? Yeah, good. So what happens is that the divergence piece looks like log of root lambda over epsilon. So derivatives with respect to geometric parameters don't see this divergence, which is why it doesn't turn up in S prime of L. Oh, wait, sorry. S prime might be finite even on even for a CFT.
No, I mean the thing that gets the trace T integral would have this divergence. Normally, you would have to regulate it, and the technical thing is TT bar regulates that by itself. At least a finite answer for this quantity that otherwise would diverge. So
yeah, so I think the statement of the smoothing out is you have to be careful. I don't know the completely perfect statement to make. It's true what your calculation about the stress tensor is of course true. In fact, this graph is reverse engineered from that calculation.
I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, but the S2 partition function and the entanglement and basically this term just turns up in all the Renyi entropies, I think.
I think I'm going to cut it off here, and we can continue this over coffee, and then we'll come back here at 4 o'clock. Let's thank the speaker again.